Welcome once again to the Gaming News Canada show. I'm your host, Steve McAllister. Today's guest is someone we've been chasing for a while now to get him on the podcast. It's been a challenge, not because he's been avoiding us, but because he's one busy man. So it's with a mix of satisfaction and relief that we finally have with us the general manager, iGaming North America for Paysafe, Greg Kirstein. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Steve, for having me, and looking forward to discussing everything Canadian gaming and payments.
Hey, Greg, before we get into Canadian gaming, I just want to get your pulse quickly. I assume you're at the home base of Montreal, a city where there's not going to be any Stanley Cup playoff hockey this spring. Is there a period of mourning that started in Montreal right now?
You know what? Usually I would say there's a period of mourning, but I would say the latest management group that's running the Canadiens has been pretty transparent at managing expectations that we're going through a rebuild. But, you know, while we definitely want to get back to the playoffs, and Montreal is that type of market, I think we're really excited by the young core of players that we have. You know, last night, just watching Lane Hutson and having him run around the blue line and having Slafkovský tip in a goal, it kind of gives you a glimpse to the future. So while we won't be in the playoffs, we're hoping next year we make a push, and we're just counting on enjoying watching the Leafs blow it again. So we get a lot of enjoyment out of that in Montreal. So let everyone enjoy and revel in Matthews maybe scoring 70, but we know they're going to blow it in the first or second round. So that's fun enough for us.
You sound like both a seasoned hockey beat writer, Greg, and a Canadiens fan and a Leaf hater. But I'm with you. I think Ken Hughes is the right guy to be rebuilding the Canadiens as the general manager there. And I'm a fan of Marty St. Louis. I think he's the right guy to be there as coach with a young team right now. And I don't think it'll be too long before we see the Canadiens back in the playoffs.
Agree. Listen, they're doing it the right way. Kent and Jeff Gordon are smart guys. I don't think we've ever seen that level of management here in a very long time. And St. Louis is the exact right coach, right personality for these new era of players that the old school way of bullying players. Like I think that's kind of part of the past. And he just allows these guys to make mistakes, which allows them to get better. And he supports that infrastructure here in Montreal. I think they just renewed him for another 2 years this morning. So we love Marty here in Montreal.
Yeah, great. Really well put, Greg. Hey, I want to start with July is going to be the 11 year anniversary of your time at Paysafe, and you started there in the summer of 2013 as a sales coordinator. And it's been quite a rise for you through the ranks, especially over the last 5 years, going from director of business development of iGaming to vice president in the iGaming department, the same role, and then being promoted, I guess, about a year ago at this time to GM iGaming North America. We're kind of these days, and I have three children in the late 20s and 30s, and it's a different working world these days. It's unusual for people to stay with a company a decade. I'm just wondering what's been different for you, and what's motivated you to have such a long run at Paysafe?
It's a good question. I mean, sometimes I kind of laugh and wonder, how it's been 11 years. The time has kind of flown by, but the reality is, and I won't bore everyone too much with the history around Paysafe, but the reality is, the business has gone through quite a bit of transformation over the last 11 years. And I've been really, really fortunate over those 11 years to get to work for some really smart people and good people that have helped mentor me and grow the business overall. And listen, like any company that grows, it goes through quite a bit of transition, and it feels, and Nick's been here quite a long time too, but it's been it almost feels like I've worked for three or four separate companies over that 11 year span. The only constant has been kind of what I've been focused on and watching the growth of the regulated gaming business here in North America. So yeah, you're right. Not a lot of people or peers or friends of mine have had the same level of tenure at a company that I have, but I think it's just a reflection of the many different types of versions of Paysafe that I've worked as a part of over the years, and being very fortunate and lucky to work for some really great people and have some really great mentors that have helped position me to capitalize on opportunities and be ready, to take on more as more has been given to me over the years. So, yeah, crazy that we're coming up on an 11-year anniversary, but you know, Paysafe's a great company. I fell in love with the gaming industry by way of my role here, and I never want to leave, and Paysafe has always given me, you know, that chance, you know, to stay and stay hungry in the space. So probably attribute most of it to all those things.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, Greg, I mean, it's been, we're still only 6 years since Passport was overturned in the US, and we've only had a regulated gambling environment in Canada since the summer of 2021. So even in those last 6 years of Paysafe, it's been, so many changes with the gambling industry, and I think probably for the better, right? I would believe that companies like Paysafe, you're much more comfortable and much more of an advocate for doing business in regulated jurisdictions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you look at Paysafe's history and the role that we have played in the proliferation of online gambling globally. You know, the business, you know, over 20 years ago, you know, likes to say that we were the first ever payments company to process a online credit card transaction for the online gambling space. And, you know, historically, you know, our business, you know, was mainly driven by gambling markets outside of North America. You know, in 2006, one of, you know, Paysafe's predecessing companies played a big role in the proliferation of online gaming in the US. But when UIGEA was enforced, you know, we left the market and were forced to grow in other markets across the globe with many different products that have transformed and have innovated quite a bit over the years. So when I started in 2013, it was really the beginning of what has unfolded over the last 11 years. So when you asked that question earlier around why I've been here for 11 years, I haven't missed a beat of the regulated market in North America. And I guess all the changes and the fact that there's just constant growth and new markets opening up, it keeps the job fun, right? And exciting. When I started in 2013, the only North American gaming client Paysafe had was Lotto Quebec, where we power their payments here in the province of Quebec. And to see that it's grown today to, you know, close to 70 operators across many different verticals that, you know, leverage one or more Paysafe products, it's been an exciting ride, you know, starting with New Jersey, Delaware, Nevada in 2013. And we thought there was going to be this massive and major boom. And California was next, still waiting 11 years later, and Pennsylvania, and things kind of slowed down. But we've always found other ways to innovate and grow. You know, in 2013, we also came across this developing disruptive industry called Daily Fantasy Sports, which, crazy to think 11 years later, the two innovators in that space, the two largest gambling companies in North America, and then continue to grow and chip away at other verticals, like grow our lottery business here in Canada, where we support all of the Canadian lotteries today. And then growing with, you know, groups like Daily Fantasy Sports and Social Casino and Skill Gaming. So, and lottery. So we've just watched all this unfold. And then soon Passport was repealed in 2018. It's kind of been even more exciting just watching every state look to others to see the tremendous amount of success that they've had and replicated that model. Not always the same, but very similar, you know, in the sense where they, you know, the market is still driven by the same dynamics and factors and payment products. And then here in Canada, you know, we've had a different reality than in the US since Passport was repealed. I mean, if you look back at our market, we have the Canadian lotteries, which have driven, you know, regulated or safe gambling within the country, but you had this unregulated market and there was a lot of, you know, uncertainty in terms of how that would unfold. You know, there was a lot of clash internally around how Canada kind of manages those operators. And I think it's an evolving and fluid situation, but when you look at Ontario kind of being the first to step up and regulate and create a safe market for consumers and generate tax revenue for the province, it's not difficult to see how, you know, proliferating that across Canada could only lead to a much, you know, larger and safer market for everyone involved with better responsible gaming controls and more oversight from a regulatory perspective. So you see how much success the U.S. has had. Ontario took notice and, you know, I know there's momentum in other provinces across Canada. So let's see how that kind of unfolds over the course of the next few years.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue to my next question, Greg. And that's we had Paul Burns from the Canadian Gaming Association on the last podcast, and we asked him about the 2-year anniversary of the Quebec, or sorry, the Ontario marketplace, just a couple of weeks ago on April 4th. And I think you probably answered the question I was going to ask you, that GeoComply, for example, which is a Canadian-based business, has been quite vocal over the past year and advocating for regulated gambling in Quebec and other provinces. And it sounds like that's PaySafe's kind of, you're in the same spot.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not going to get my hopes up too quickly, because back to my comment earlier, in 2013, we thought there'd be this massive boom immediately after we saw New Jersey, Delaware, or Nevada adopt some form of online casino or poker. In Canada, it's a bit more complicated. Things move, you know, a bit slower here. But I would say, I mean, there's definitely momentum. Paul would know a lot more than I do in terms of kind of what's happening on the regulatory front. So whatever answer he gave, I would defer to Paul in terms of timing. But, you know, listen, there's been a lot of momentum. I think the first province that we'll see is probably Alberta. They've been the most vocal. There is a plan in place there to try to maybe do something here by the end of 2024. Maybe that bleeds into 2025. We've heard many different versions of what that private market can look like, whether it's a combination of a few operators, whether it's, you know, completely open like Ontario, anybody is free to come and get licensed and join that market. We'll see how things unfold. I think there's also been, you know, some noise around Quebec. I think Quebec has always been a bit more complicated. You know, there's a lot more to it, especially with language laws making it maybe a bit more difficult for operators to kind of come into the space. So we'll see if that ends up being a deterrence. But I think in general, like, listen, the way I look at it, there is a regulated market in Canada today, and it stretches across all provinces with the lotteries. They do a fantastic job, you know, especially with their casino, poker, and lottery products. It's a bit more difficult to compete with sports, given some of the other operators that are live in their jurisdictions today that just have premium products on that side of the fence. But listen, I think Alberta, the momentum there is positive. There's at least chatter in some of the other markets. So I think over time, if you just continue to see the numbers and what the market will evolve to and turn into in Ontario, I think like there's projections that have the market growing to over $3 billion market in the next few years. That's a lot of tax revenue that can go back into the province that can help with a multitude of other things. So I don't have a crystal ball. Like I said, Paul probably knows a lot more than I do, but I am bullish that I don't know if it's going to be immediate, but over the medium to long term, I think we'll see more and more regulation across Canada.
Yep, no, I'd agree with that, Greg. And again, Paul, I think like all of us, doesn't have a timeline, but there's certainly some positive momentum in Alberta, where the provincial government has put aside some funding and has given one of their ministers, Dale Nally, a mandate to create an iGaming regime. So we'll see how that shakes out and when that launches in that province. You know, we've had a chance. Yeah, go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
The last thing I'll comment on that is, if you look at Europe and the UK and other markets, it was also a pretty similar slow roll, right? I think you see more and more markets today taking a regulated approach. So, yeah, like the US went quickly after PASPA. I don't think we'll see that same level of speed here like we did also in Europe. But over time, if you look at all the number of countries across Europe and the UK that regulated and created those safe environments, the same thing I think will eventually happen here. Just, it's not a matter of when, it's not a matter of if, it's just more of a matter of when.
You and I have spoken at conferences over the past 3 years, Greg, and thanks to the work that Nick Say, your communications chief in Montreal, does and keeping us up to date on what's going on at PaySafe and in the payments industry. But we really haven't had a chance on this forum to dig into the evolution of payments. And again, you know, one thing I have learned from covering this industry since February 2021 is are two things. Product's really, really important, and ease of payment is really, really important. So I'd just like to ask you, just how has the whole payment, the payment product and innovation, how has that evolved over maybe the last, going back to the overturning of PASPA, but maybe over your time in the industry?
It's a good question, and I can probably rant for a very long time. So I'll try to keep it succinct for the benefit of the audience who doesn't have to listen to my boring payment speak for 10 minutes. But the reality is, the payments ecosystem in North America since 2013 has evolved significantly. Just to, and again, every market has its own very specific challenges in terms of the evolution of payments and the role payments have played in the growth of the market. If you look at the US in 2013, prior to 2013, after UIGEA was passed, every major issuing bank in the US just completely blacklisted the global merchant category code for online gambling, which is 7995. Merchant category code, for those that don't know, Visa and MasterCard and the card brands have a four-digit code associated to every industry that they participate in, which categorizes the industry. And for gambling globally, it's 7995. So there was a, you know, you had consumers who were used to interacting in an e-commerce setting using their credit and debit cards, especially with credit penetration and debit penetration, you know, very large in the US, that tried those products and they simply didn't work. Customers weren't able to use mainstream payment methods to fund their wallet. So the need for alternative payment methods, especially for the first 5 years until PASPA was repealed, was absolutely paramount. Things like ACH or traditional, at, you know, putting in your checking and routing number and getting a limit and being able to move money through the ACH network into your wagering account, whether it was PayPal, albeit a clunky experience, whether it was some of our own digital assets like Neteller in the early 2013. There was alternative ways to fund that wallet. And if you look at some of those customer journeys, they were very poor compared to what they are. And when you're trying to, when the operators are spending money on player acquisition and they're trying to bring new players into their site, yeah, the product can be amazing, but if the customer enrolls and then tries to make a deposit and it fails and they try something again and it fails, they're either going to abandon it altogether or they're going to go somewhere else. So operators that were able to make that journey seamless over the years were the ones who, you know, there was a direct correlation between customer acquisition and retention and a positive player experience as it relates to depositing and withdrawing. If you look at the research that we did, all the ways players pay, withdrawals and speed of withdrawals is one of the number one retention tools as it relates to consumers for why they stay with a specific sportsbook or online casino. So I would, if you look at, you know, back to the card piece that I mentioned, in 2018 when PASPA was repealed, not only did these schemes try to you know, fix this problem by introducing a new regulated merchant category code in the US, that still didn't quite do it. It really, there was a lot of important players in the space, whether it was the card brands or some of the major issuers or the AGA in the US, that played a pivotal role in speaking to the heads of some of these top five banks in the US to educate them on the fact that this is safe, regulated, licensed gambling. Approval rates on credit and debit are now in the US over 90%, right? Especially for debit. So it's a really good player experience. And ACH, for example, traditional ACH, has evolved into things like online banking where you can just log into your online bank and make a deposit. Things like Apple Pay. Because debit cards work well, why would I go through the trouble of adding a bunch of information to use a specific deposit method when I can just look at my phone, use Face ID, and make a deposit into my wagering account? So I would say the evolution of mainstream payment methods, mainstream payment methods, increasing approval rates and making it easier to use those payment methods have made the overall experience easier. But just the evolution of other products and things like online banking here in Canada, if you look at the way Interac was used traditionally, it wasn't the best experience. You had to go into your Interac account and add a payee that wasn't even directly correlated to the operator. And now you can just do things like request to pay and go through like a true online banking experience. Payments have evolved quite significantly over the years. And like I said, through our research, if you look at the role that payments play in retention and acquisition, it's one of the top factors. So getting it right, and you look at the US and look at who some of the largest operators are, yeah, they spend a lot of money to acquire customers. But if you really go through their product and go through their payment journey, it's way better than most in the space. And that's a big reason why they're able to stay popular. That's a huge focal point for them. So yeah, the evolution has been gone from everything from approval rates to just evolution of products to, you know, finding creative ways to use those to make it a competitive advantage.
Hey, Greg, you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that digital wallets are still fairly new, and that kind of represents, I think, from some of the research Paysafe did, that's a minority of customers using digital wallets. Just again, for someone like me who's I was giddy last year when I finally figured out I could use my phone to tap my use my Visa card to pay for the underground in London at well, we're at ICE at the ICE conference. Just what is a digital wallet and how is that evolving as a preference for players?
Yeah, I would say digital wallet preference, its adoption and growth are a bit more prevalent over the years in Europe than they are in North. Listen, when people there's a bunch of different ways to categorize a digital wallet, right? In one sense, people think about player wallet, which is the wallet that operators use to manage customer funds within. There's wallets like Apple Pay and Google Pay, which is really just tokenizing your credit card or debit card to make it easier and quicker to make a deposit. Rather than typing in your information, you store that code into an Apple wallet and you just use like Face ID to complete that deposit. You look at other forms of e-commerce, you see things like Shop Pay and Amazon Pay. The reality is you're not using a different payment instrument within those digital wallet experiences to actually make a purchase. You're just storing your card and you're making it easier and faster for customers to check out and pay. When you look at what we call a digital wallet, you look at some of the products that we own and operate, like Skrill and Neteller, and you also think more traditionally of PayPal. There is newer peer-to-peer wallets in the U.S. that are very popular amongst millennial and Gen Z consumers, like Venmo and Apple Pay, but all have different utility within those wallets, right? With Venmo and Cash App, you can deposit money into a wallet. You have a balance there, and you can interact with friends when you send the money. And it's kind of become like a verb in the U.S., just Venmo me some money. But when you look at Skrill and Neteller and PayPal, generally, these are digital wallets that you open up a digital wallet, whether it's PayPal, Skrill, or Neteller. You register your KYC by that provider. We have information on the consumer as well. And what a digital wallet allows you to do is it really is a digital wallet. You're funding that wallet with a variety of different payment mechanisms, whether that's bank transfer, a credit or debit card, or an ACH transfer. And you're using those funds to move money in and money out of a particular operator's site. So, if you look at Skrill, for example, if you have $100 balance in your Skrill wallet, and you use Skrill to fund sorry, I was going to say Barstool, your ESPN bet account, for example, you just take those funds and you push funds into your wallet through Skrill, and you can get money out into that wallet, and that wallet balance is available to you almost immediately. So, if you look at certain consumers, especially in Europe over time, every single time you make a deposit, you don't want to continue to re-enter your credit card. Maybe you don't want to give personal information like attach your bank account. So having a wallet that you can use for gambling and gaming purposes to move money in and out of it quickly and seamlessly is a huge advantage for players. I think us with Skrill and Neteller, we've had massive success in markets outside of North America. Competing with PayPal in North America is tough. It's challenging and it's expensive. They obviously are the predominant wallet in North America, but player preferences change. Every consumer is not built the same way. They have different preferences. Some just want to make are more casual, want to make it easy. Some want more of a wallet to balance and manage their funds. So there's different utility to that wallet depending on the consumer. But yeah, digital wallets have only going to continue to grow in popularity. And there's just to name a few that are more akin to our industry in North America, but there's tons of them now globally in different markets. And it's a great alternative to just more mainstream payment methods.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
there must be a storyline from a demographic perspective too, Greg, I would think, where young people don't carry cash these days. And as especially in these regulated gambling environments where we do see more young people betting on sports and playing online casino, that the digital wallets are just, you know, cashless payments. That's really in those people's wheelhouse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you, like I mentioned, Venmo and Cash App, like if you are a younger gambling consumer in the US and you're just registering for the first time and you're 21 or 22, you're so used to using these payment methods in everyday life. So there's a real reference between which payment instruments you use outside of gaming and which ones you use in the gaming industry. And what the gaming industry has done, and back to the evolution of payments, is trying to make the customer experience as seamless as you possibly can, but also make it or relate it to how they use payment methods in their everyday life. So try to make it more mainstream, right? If you go back to 2013, like I mentioned, some of the early days of online gambling, the payments experience was not even close to mainstream. Mainstream payment methods weren't working. You were using payment methods that you would never use in any other setting outside of if you were funding your online casino account in New Jersey. Today, with the proliferation of gaming and the fact that it's become so mainstream and it's safe for consumers and for operators, and we've educated, you know, all the main issuers and core payment providers that, you know, what is happening here is safe, more and more have, you know, wanted to join the space and participate with their product. So, you know, I don't think we're all the way there yet, but especially for a younger demographic of customers that are joining the space now compared to what it was 10 years ago, it's a much different experience, and they're using payment products that they're used to using in their everyday life.
Hey, Greg, you talked about the speed of the in and out a second ago, and I'm just wondering if we've seen the increase on the sports betting side in terms of parlay betting and live in-game betting. And then we also see in Ontario as well, where iGaming Ontario reports about, I think we're 83% now of Ontario regulated customers are playing online casino, and about 16-17% betting on sports. Is there a correlation between that and the payments piece?
Like I said at the beginning, there's a direct correlation between the payments experience and customer retention and acquisition. And listen, look no further to in-game betting. You have consumers that want to make bets now. Those lines change every second, every minute, depending on the sport. So if you don't have funds in your account and you want to, you know, bet on what happens at the end of the second period of a Leafs and Habs game, you know, you got to get money in your, if you don't have money in your account, you got to get money in your wagering account pretty quickly. So if you build a good payments experience, which allows customers to fund their wallets quickly and seamlessly, that gives them quicker access to funds within their player wallet to go make those in-game bets. So if you're running them through an experience that takes long or is clunky or using non-traditional payment methods, or maybe have a product but are offering it in an inefficient way, that just adds more time to the deposit experience. It frustrates the player. It maybe shrinks the opportunity that of some of the in-game bets that they wanted to make, because as time passes, that those lines can change quite rapidly. So, you know, I definitely there's a correlation there. And I think the better the payments experience, the quicker you can get money in and out, only adds that experience overall for the consumer. So, because at the end of the day, they don't know who PaySafe is. They don't care that their Visa or their MasterCard isn't working. They don't care that their Interact e-transfer failed. They blame the operator at the end of the day. That's who they're interacting with. So the better operators interact with or integrate and embed payments, and the better providers that they select to, you know, complement that experience that they want to build, is only going to add to the overall experience a consumer has when playing with some of those products, for sure.
Hey, Greg, is PaySafe, and we know that with land-based casinos that there are more cashless options now. Is that a space where PaySafe is playing as well?
We've looked at it quite a bit, honestly, over the years. Today, I would say it's not maybe directly in our wheelhouse. So our gaming business historically has traditionally been online. There are a few players in that space that we know quite well. It is very interesting trying to create an omni-channel experience. Like, for example, especially if you're an operator who has land-based assets, how do you bridge the online to the offline? So, for example, if maybe it's a bad example because it's Ontario, so maybe I'll use Vegas, for example. Hey, if I go to Caesars Casino and I want to, you know, play blackjack or whatever slots or whatever the case might be. And then I return to New Jersey where, or Illinois where Caesars has online assets, then to be able to use the same balance, they fund it into that wallet from a cashless perspective when I was in Vegas and now have access to those funds to use at a digital asset in a state where online sports betting is legalized, then for sure. And I think it's a very challenging problem to solve for. I think we've seen a lot of groups provide solutions for part of what the future cashless experience looks like. And also, I don't think cash is going anywhere so quickly in a land-based setting. I think a couple of years ago, there was a lot of momentum around cashless. Yeah, the casino is going to be completely cashless within 5 years. Well, it's 5 years later, and we're not even close to that yet. So I think there's a few things. No one has been able to solve for the right product, number one. Number two, I think there's something to be said when going to a land-based casino and taking out cash or coming with cash and then leaving with cash. So I think, you know, there's still a change. Hey, maybe that changes with the next generation. Maybe Gen Z and millennials care less about that than some of the older generations. But the reality is that experience, if you're going to move to a cashless casino, the experience better be 10 on 10. Because if it's not, it just creates more churn, more player dissatisfaction. Like they just want to go. Like they're traveling to Vegas, a lot of people, so they can go and have fun and gamble. Like if they have to go through this whole registration process and it's clunky and they got to attach their bank account and fund their wallet, takes a long time. I think you'll see it with slots first. You've definitely seen some evolution there. But until we get to table games being cashless, I still think we're a pretty long way away from that. And if you even look at the market overall and what the total addressable opportunity is, I still think no one doesn't really know what the overall opportunity is. It's always changing. So we definitely have looked at it. We definitely have the right assets to look at it. I talked about our wallet capabilities. It's not easy to build out a wallet that has money transmission licenses across Canada or the US. So those assets are definitely an important piece of figuring out how we eventually solve that problem as an industry. But yeah, we've peaked, but nothing imminent for us to go into that space.
Two more questions for you, Greg. First, where does cryptocurrency fit into the payments puzzle in the gaming space?
It's always a crowd favorite, this question. To be honest, I think we're a long ways away from crypto. You know, people might have thought differently a few years ago when crypto was exploding, but I would say some of the negative situations that have impacted crypto have been kind of front and center over the last 2 years. We've definitely seen a declination in its value. We've definitely seen a lot of what we thought were big, important, major, reputable companies end up operating pretty nefariously, which created a lot of headlines. Listen, I think the market right now, it's all about promoting safe, regulated gambling. If you want to regulate a particular market, you're making it safer for consumers and you're giving more visibility to operators and regulators to make sure they control and safeguard the space. Crypto, the whole allure to crypto is the anonymity of crypto. And I don't think the anonymity of crypto ties very well to what we want, which is increased visibility in a regulated market. Do I think the market has to innovate and eventually get to a solution that works for crypto because so many consumers want to use it? Absolutely. But right now, I just think there's not enough visibility and safeguards around the industry as a whole to be used, you know, in a regulated space. AML is top concerns. Like, if you want to use funds from your crypto.com wallet to fund your wagering account, you don't know the source of those funds, how they originally funded that wallet. I think we're going to get there for sure as an industry, but I don't think it's going to happen in the near future. I think it's going to take time. There's going to need to be a little bit more credibility and oversight into crypto before we introduce it to a space that cares heavily for the right reasons around KYC and AML.
Final question. What's top of mind for you in your role overseeing iGaming for North America at PaySafe right now when you wake up in the morning? What's the opportunity? What's the challenge?
I know this might sound cliche, but top of mind is always our customers. You know, one thing that I have learned and that we take tremendous amount of pride in at PaySafe is the customer relationships. We don't look at our role as another vendor in their stack. We look at it as a partnership because the more innovative we can be, the more that we can help, you know, the more benefit it is to the operator itself. So making sure that we're in a spot where we're managing our customers and we're continuing to innovate on the product side to continue to stay relevant is usually top of mind. Listen, if you asked me the question in the beginning around 2013, there was very little PAM providers that were servicing the online gaming space. Like, new entrants didn't have to venture too far to find out who was going to help support their payment stack. Because of UIGA, because of the slow adoption of regulation in PASPA, there weren't many providers in the space. So now when you look at how big the business has become and you see the sports leagues behind it and major banking institutions behind it and more mainstream payment solutions, you know, coming into the space, it's become a lot more competitive. There's a lot of new entrants in there that want to get a piece of this industry. You know, being the incumbent and one of the incumbents is good in the sense where we do have credibility, but, you know, sometimes people want to try new things. And we got to make sure as a company that we're continuing to innovate to, you know, make sure that we are bringing new things from the market and we're not just, you know, feel like it's owed to us because we've been in the market for as long as we have. So, you know, one thing, we just put a major emphasis on building those customer relationships, innovating from a product perspective to make sure that we are always evolving as a business, because our products and what we were solving for 5 years ago are not the same to what they are now. So listen, and keeping pace, we're still a big company. Sometimes I always want things to move at a million miles a minute, but you definitely got to be sensitive that there's a larger organization at stake too. And how we prioritize that is always difficult, but, you know, making sure that, you know, gaming is always front and center is never going to change. It's part of who we are. It's part of our DNA. It's why we've been doing this for 20 plus years. So like I said, don't take it for granted at all. Operate every day like someone's trying to steal our business away from us. So staying close to our customers, making sure they feel good about their relationship with Paysafe, and, you know, innovation is key. If we just continue to pump out the same products out there, then someone eventually is going to come in, disrupt, and do it better than we are. So it's probably what keeps me up and motivated each and every day.
Yeah, I think if you like being comfortable, Greg, working in the sports betting and gaming industry probably isn't for you. Well, that's a great answer. Let's wrap it up there. Greg Kirstein is the Vice President, iGaming North America for Paysafe. Hey, Greg, this was long overdue, and even though I joked about it at the top of the podcast, it really is great finally getting you on the show, and I'm sure our pals will cross at the Canadian Gaming Summit in June, but really appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely. I know, everyone thinks payments just work and they should work and it should be easy, but there's a lot more to it than that. And choosing the right providers and with the right products is just critical. And you see the numbers and how that translates. So encourage everyone who's listening to go download our report and listen to it. There's some incredible insights around the role payments play in this space, and, you know, great work done by our team. But Steve, like I said, appreciate you having me. Let's try to do this again more often, because things are always changing and evolving. Hopefully next time we speak, there's more markets that we can talk about. But awesome experience, and appreciate you having me.
Yeah, we will do that for sure, Greg. That's it for this episode of the Gaming News Canada show. As always, you can find these podcasts at gamingnewscanada.ca and also on the various podcast platforms. Thanks again to Greg Kirstein from Paysafe, and we will see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca. Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.